This is the Pitch Vision Academy show number 78. This is the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, Gary Palmer gives you professional batting advice. Full-time cricket coach Darren Talbot answers your questions. And David has a last over thriller. What really happened in this last over thriller, David? Did you guys come out on top? Did you not?
Yeah, we played pretty well. We took a side to a town a couple of hours away. But when we got there, it was a lovely little ground. And won the toss. We batted first in a 40-over match. I was batting up the order, number four. So very excited about being able to do that. And then I sat there in my pads watching our openers put on about 150. But that was good, you know. I was enjoying the fact that we were getting some runs, so you know that there's no problem there. And then we lost a wicket. The new batsman came out and started hitting it around as well, and I thought, well, I might not get a bat here. And 35 overs had gone, and we finally lost our second wicket after 35 overs, with nearly 200 on the board. So we were looking really good. The number three batsman said to me, "Oh, it's pretty easy batting out here." And the first ball I faced, I just pushed it into the covers for one. And then the second ball I faced, played a beautiful on drive, but unfortunately the mid on was back on the boundary, so it just was one.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, this is easy. It felt really easy. You know, both of the shots came off the middle, and then the batsman at the other end played a pull shot, and so we set off, and it was probably the longest boundary, and judging by the fielder, he wouldn't have a great throw. So I said to him, as we crossed, as you're supposed to, I said, "Easy two," because it wasn't easy two, but it was his call because he pulled it behind square. I touched down, I turned again as exactly as you're supposed to, just touched the bat in, slid the bat in the last couple of centimetres, and then set off, ready to go for the two, when I heard the other batsman say wait, so I slowed down to make sure that I could get back in case he said no, and he said no. So I was turning back, plenty of time, no problem, easily get back. I was only two paces away when he said yes. So I thought, right, we're off. Took two paces down the track, just as the throw was starting to come in. Still would have made it easy when the batsman said, actually, no. And I had just had time to turn around, take about a pace and a half back towards the stumps, before the wicketkeeper whipped the veils off. If he'd have gone, if he'd have turned and gone, he'd have made it easily. But it was the classic no, yes, no, and it left me absolutely stitched up in the middle, looking like a chump.
Did you have a word to him after the game, David?
Well, yeah, one or two words were had, yeah, but nothing too serious. Only it was only a friendly game. You can't get too worried about it. But I did stand there. I did stand there for quite a long time, looking at him without walking off. It was probably only about 10 seconds, but you know when someone's really staring you down, and he saw he couldn't look at me, he couldn't say anything, and then eventually I dragged myself back to the pavilion, not particularly happy. But there we go, and then I patrolled the covers for the rest of the game, which is an unusual experience for me. Nothing came my way particularly in terms of catches. I misfielded one, but generally fielded okay. We scored 233, and they were always on target for it, but they were losing wickets quite quickly. Then they had a stand, a little stand towards the end, and they were five down in the last over, and the star batsman who had been getting all the runs was facing, and he tried to hit one out the park to win the game. They needed seven to win at this point. He tried to hit it out the park to win the game with five balls left. I was standing at square leg at the time, and the square leg umpire said to me, "That's it. You've won the game now. This new chap isn't a good enough batsman to score the required run. Seven runs off four balls. He's not going to be able to do that."
Yeah.
So he blocks the first one, has a big swing at the second one, and puts it straight over mid off for six. and then just nudges one down to. As cool as you like, nudges one down to short fine leg. We brought everyone up on the signal, of course, when the scores were tied. We nudged just nudged one down to short fine leg and took an easy signal to win the game. So it's an exciting finish, and it was good to have a run out again. A good practice match for everybody involved, but unfortunately not for my batting. Although I am feeling quite confident now because the two balls I faced, I played two lovely shots. So, you know, I didn't play a miss or I didn't look dodgy. I played a good cover drive and a good on drive.
Looks like it's good signs, David. And I'm sure your team learned a bit as well from that, because I've heard that the more where you're facing situations of close games, when it actually matters, you actually come out on top. So that experience might go a long way as your season comes across. And for you personally as well, you're not playing the next friendly, are you?
Well, the league starts on Saturday, so we'll. We've got my first game in charge.
Oh, nice!
My home match, so I'll be down there. I'll be down there at 9:30 in the morning.
Nice.
Maybe not quite that early, but I'll be down early and trying to encourage the bowlers to get themselves loose and to have a couple of warm up overs and try and encourage the batsmen to have a bit of a net before the game starts. Just to make sure they get their eye in.
Nice.
And we'll go for a win.
We have Gary Palmer again with us to answer your batting questions for this week. Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
This is a question from a batsman who obviously wants to score a bit more quickly, and it's quite a simple question. How can I hit the gaps more often? It feels that especially early on in my innings, I hit the fielders hard and I want to hit the gaps hard.
Just the word hard there is making me think, is this player punching at the ball too hard early on in his innings where the ball flies straight to the fielder, where perhaps he could be letting the ball come to him, soak up the energy, just drop it on the floor close to him, so the fielder's got a long way to come in. Therefore, it's easier for him to get his single. I would say when he's opening the batting, be aware of where the gaps are, but play the ball as you see it. Because it's a nice idea, you know, trying to hit the ball square the wicket into gaps. But when someone's got a new ball and the pitch is doing a bit, generally, it's not going to work. Number one is you've got to get yourself in, play the percentages. So being aware of where the field is. And when a ball goes into a certain area, you play it, it's gone into a particular area, you know where the fielders are, then you judge your run. And maybe the longer he stays in, if he finds the field stay in that inner ring, maybe he's got to take calculated risk to create some gaps by hitting the ball straight over the top of mid-on or mid-off. So maybe they get pushed back. And the longer he stays in, if he's got a good technique, the runs will come. I'm a great advocate of, if you are looking to attack it, hit over the top of mid-on or mid-off, because you use exactly the same body shape as the defences and the drives into those areas. So it's not so much of a major change, apart from hitting the ball slightly earlier. Now, to go from playing nice straight shots to suddenly dropping your elbow, playing around your pad and hitting across the line is quite a big change, and therefore it's a risk, and then people get out doing that. But there is not a brick wall built around the inner ring. You know, natural variation. If you bowled six balls at me, I guarantee you one of them would go into a gap without even trying.
So do you ever do practices where you try and get players to hit the gaps?
No, I give the players the basics to the highest level possible. So I give them the tools, and then it's up to them to go out into matches and use those tools, you know, their own way, find out what works or doesn't work for them within match situations, which will form the way they play in the future. Yeah, of course, we do have practices where you do look to sort of try and hit the ball in the gaps, but those sorts of changes in angle for me, if I'm coaching a player to do that, would be very small changes. So you're only going to hit it slightly to the left of the fielder or the right, but you're going to keep your elbow up to do it. So you've still got a nice shape as if you're going to hit through mid-on. Let's say the ball's coming in at your legs, but you keep your elbow up. You might let the ball come, turn the face of the bat slightly, but you've got your elbow up and it's, you know, the bat's swinging in a reasonably straight line to the ball. Yeah, we do those things, but they're just very slight changes, not to the extreme. You see too many people going to the extreme. So you've got a straight ball, they're trying to hit backward a point, or it's on middle and off, and they're trying to hit a square leg. The degree of change or the angles don't want to be so obtuse. They're more sort of tiny, tiny angle changes.
So you wouldn't advocate the type of practice where you've got cones spread around, you know, at different fielding positions, and you're either using a bowling machine or just someone doing a bobble feed, and the idea is to hit the cones in the order. So you have someone at point and that kind of thing. You wouldn't advocate that kind of practice.
Definitely not. I would do something similar to the point where you might have three cones at mid off, you know, three cones straight, three different colour cones at mid on. If someone's bobbling a ball to you, you as the coach or the feeder might call a different colour. So you might bobble me one on off stump and I might actually try, and then you might call blue, which is where the leg side cones are. When I mean leg side cones, they're pretty much on the strip, no wider. So then I'd go for the leg side cones. You might bobble another one and call, this might be straight ball, you might call the offside. So again, you are making small changes, and I think it's a good practice, but what I'm saying is that the segment you're trying to manoeuvre the ball in needs to be a smallish segment, not like the whole half of the field, where too much can go wrong with the technique. To throw a straight ball or bowl a straight ball at someone on a bowling machine on a length, right, on middling off and say hit it a square leg, for me, all that's going to do is undo all the good work you've done in the winter with constructing that player's technique. Or to get the same ball and try and run it down to third man. I just think not a good practice. You've got to be at quite a high level to be doing that sort of thing. And even then, it's quite risky. I'd rather see someone whack it over the top down the ground, if possible. Those sort of practices look good on paper, but you've got to be careful how you do them. With hitting the different areas, rather than put your foot straight down the line on middle and leg and swing the bat around your pad or away from your body to the offside, it's a good idea to try and manoeuvre your body position in the crease. So a forward defensive straight up the wicket, but now I want to hit that ball at maybe, I don't know, wide mid on. I might just manoeuvre myself in the crease so I'm near enough playing a forward defensive and swinging the bat in a straight line. So it's the same shot as a straight defensive, but I've manoeuvred myself and I'm playing it at mid-on now. It's better to do that so you've got a full blade of the bat going at the ball. And on the offside, again, you might want to just let the ball go a little bit, step across to it and aim it slightly squarer. Some people tend to still keep their elbow up and just open the face of the bat slightly to hit a particular gap. Again, so your bat isn't playing, it's not away from your body. It's the same shape of shot. You might just open the face on contact. On leg side, maneuver your body slightly and close the face slightly on contact. Offside, again, step across the crease more, let the ball come rather than going up the wicket. Open the face slightly. Those will give you slight different degrees of angle, you know, to hit different areas.
Thanks, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. We're pretty excited because we have a full-time cricket coach, Darren Tolbert, coming in this week to answer our readers' questions. So let's get into it, guys. Welcome to the questions section for this week. And this week, we're lucky to have Darren Tolbert, the Managing Director of Darren Tolbert Cricket Coaching. Darren does coaching at clubs, at cricket clubs and schools around the UK, and he's been a full-time professional coach for about 5 years. So thanks for helping us out, Darren.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be here.
All right, guys, our first question is from Adam, and he says, I have a question. I've noticed that some of the players, usually the good ones, and many international cricketers use two or more grips on their bat at one time. My good friend and leading run scorer at our club says he finds this much more comfortable and easier to use. Is this a personal preference, or is there an actual advantage to doing this? Darren, what's your opinion on this?
Well, for me, this is very much a preference thing. if you've got hands like buckets, you probably don't want to have just a single grip on the back because it's not going to feel right. But if you've only got small hands, then maybe a single grip is fine. It also affects the balance of the bat as well. So it's just something you need to be comfortable with. And if you find that a single grip is not right or a double grip it's not right, then just experiment. Grips are pretty cheap. So it's one of those fantastic things you can fiddle around with until it feels right for you.
The other advantage, the other thing that I would say about that is that there are some grips that are thicker than others. So I've only got one grip on my bat at the moment, purely because it's one of these new style ones that sort of spin around the bat in the shape of it. So it's a lot thicker. It probably feels like about two grips. But if you buy a bat from the shop, the rubber grips that come with the bats are usually not that great. So you might want to put an extra one on just to see how that feels.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If the bat feels right, then the grip is just something to sort of tinker around with as you see fit.
The other thing that I heard once was that, I can't remember who it was, but certainly a professional player used to cut a grip in half and put half a grip on the bottom of the bat. And that would sort of encourage you to hold on to the bat with the bottom hand a bit more loosely, because the handle's a bit thicker. So a bit like the half a squash ball in the glove that Gilchrist was famous for, that I see a lot of people talking about, should I do that? Maybe a slightly easier way to do it is to put half a grip on the bottom of the bat just to remind you, so it feels a bit thicker and it reminds you not to be choking the handle.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I haven't heard of the half a grip one before, but that seems very sensible. I wouldn't want to get too hung up on the grip issue, because I think really you should be fairly comfortable with your bat fairly quickly. So if you're forever changing your grip, maybe you should be looking at changing maybe a mental approach to the game, possibly. But yeah. Certainly, be comfortable with your bat. That's the important thing.
It's one of those things, grip, isn't it? Like, cricket's got a lot of these little things which you can get quite obsessive about if you let yourself.
Yeah.
But you forget that the idea is to hit the cricket ball. Don't worry too much about, what the shape is on the back of the bat, or, what the stickers look like, or how many grips you've got. It's about middling the ball at the end of it all. So
absolutely. If your technique's good and you're confident, probably you won't pay a blind bit of notice to what's on the grip of your bat. It's a cricket is a game so much played in the mind, and it can be a distraction.
Thanks, guys. Our next question is from Strandloper, and he says, I need to know if it's possible to get a good off-season cricket program for club-level players. What do you reckon, guys? Do you think you can help them out?
Well, that's quite a broad question, that one. Where to start? The off-season, obviously, time to work on problems you might have had during the season, or maybe just areas which you could improve on. The way I would start was really by analysing what's gone well from the season just gone, maybe what was bad, have a look at dismissals, see if you're out, maybe caught behind more often than you might have been, or maybe you drop more catches than the slips, or maybe bowl too many wides, no balls. Cricket's wonderful for statistics. There are plenty of stats you can go through, and you can get an awful lot of analysis out of that. When I was playing regularly, I was forever writing down all my stats, which people thought was strangely obsessive, and probably was, but what it meant was when it came to analyse how my season had gone, there were so many different things I could pick up on from that. So, really having a look at what you've done, what's been good and what's been bad, will help form the basis for maybe what you might like to try and work on during the off-season. I'd also give yourself a rest as well, because there's nothing worse after hopefully playing a lot of cricket during the season to then all of a sudden in September, October, start hitting the nets and working on things. As I said earlier, it's a very much a mental game, and you need to have a break from it. And even the pros will have a sort of a good couple of months off to clear their heads. So don't try and start working on things in September, October, and panicking then. Give yourself a couple of months off, and then maybe either just before or just after Christmas, that may be the time to have a think about improving things. The other thing I'd say is it's a great time to experiment. People don't tend to experiment off-season quite as much as they should do, for me. Things like slower balls, variations, crease position, batting or bowling. So as well as working on the good things and the bad things, try some new things as well. It's a fantastic opportunity to do that. And making the most of that time, particularly I think between sort of January, February, March time, is really important. If you can get some video analysis, that I tend to find these days is something that is worth its weight in gold. Something we use quite a lot with our one-to-one sessions, and you can pick up an enormous amount of things just by seeing it on TV, on film. It helps you to work out and work solutions to problems so much easier than maybe someone just talking to you about it. And obviously, get a good coach. You need someone who understands the technicality of these things, so they can work with you quite closely.
I like to break the off season down a little bit, because it can be, especially if you're playing in a country with a longer off season as opposed to somewhere like, say, India, where there's quite a short off season. If you're playing in England or in Australia, where the off season is relatively long, I think it's a good idea to break it down, like you said, Darren. Start by stopping, you know, just forget about the cricket for a little while, because it physically and mentally it can be tiring having a season of cricket, and you don't want to get too jaded. So having a rest, just doing sort of anything else really, even if it's playing another sport or just you know whatever, just pop into the gym a couple of times or whatever you want to do, that's fine. Just forget about the cricket for a little while, and then maybe you can split then the off season down into sort of the early off season, the winter if you like, and then the late off season or the pre season, where you start thinking about the season coming up. And in the winter, in the sort of dark nights, that's the time to be working on stuff that you just don't get the time to do, the technical side of things and building up your fitness levels to get them as high as possible. We did a article recently on Pitch Vision Academy that talked about how bowlers of the past used to get themselves fit in the off season by going off and doing manual jobs, you know, and that would be, you know, if they're lifting up tires or something, you know, that's suddenly you're building up a great amount of strength. So in modern times, maybe there aren't as many manual jobs around, but there's plenty of gyms around, so you know, maybe you can hit the gym, work on your strength, work on your power, build a good base, and also get all that technical stuff done when you can hit a lot of balls in the indoor nets. And then as the season approaches, then shift your attention more away from the technical side and more towards the tactical side. So you're playing games where you're trying to develop a game plan that works best for you. Everyone will have a different game plan because no one's technically perfect. So you've got to decide what game plan works best for you. And that does come with experience, but it also comes with practicing in the way that you would play out in the middle. So put yourself in situations that you would be out in the middle and practice them in the nets. You don't have to just go in the net and have a hit. You can have tactical practice as well. You can set up games. There's loads of stuff on Pitch Vision Academy about tactical practice. So have a look at that. And again, remember that what it all boils down to, all this sort of messing around in the nets, what it really all boils down to is what you can do in the middle, you know, how accurately you can bowl and how many balls you can hit. So stay focused on that all the way. Even that can be difficult if you're in the dead of winter and you're in the gym and you're doing, you know, your workout, and maybe you're not particularly enjoying it because it's a tough workout and you think this is a long way from hitting a cricket ball or a long way from knocking over some stumps. But you know you're building towards something, and that's a good way to stay motivated, I find.
All right, guys, the next question is from Holiness, and he has a couple of questions, actually. The first part of the question is, he has a few problems with his cover driving, and he says, I drive in the air most of the time. Help me to drive along the ground more consistently. What do you reckon, guys?
This is something I come across a lot. Driving on the ground really is all about getting over the ball, getting the head right over your front foot. And a lot of batters I see tend to be a bit lazy with their cover driving and use their hand position to sort of compensate for having a very poor head position. And obviously that leads to mistakes, because if the technique's not quite right, you might get away with it at the start of your innings. But if you relax a bit, the concentration goes a bit, if the technique's not quite there, you're going to find yourself hitting the ball in the air and getting caught. So I would say really got to practice really hard on making sure that front foot goes right out, that head goes over the ball, and there with the right sort of transference of weight, you should be hitting the ball on the ground 99 times out of 100.
Yeah, for me it's about the head as well. One excellent drill that you can do to help with head position, or help learn how far forward you really need to get your head, because it's it's probably a bit further than you think you can go if you're hitting it in the air all the time, is to get somebody to do a tennis ball drop drill. So they just stand, they hold the ball about shoulder height, they drop it down and you drive it, but then they move a pace forward and drop the ball down again. You have to move a pace forward and hit the ball again. And they have four or five tennis balls and you have to hit four or five in a row as you're walking forward. And that will just encourage you to get your head forward, because you're moving, your whole body's moving forward. Just encourage you to get your head going. As soon as your head goes, your shoulder goes, your foot goes, and everything starts to get in the right position. If you can do that drill a couple of times a week, start getting your head right forward, further. When you think you're far forward enough, get a bit further forward, because if you're driving in the air, you're not getting forward enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys, he also says, I have a lot of potential and I have great shots, but sometimes I just seem to lose focus, either through nervousness or lack of belief in myself. Can you give me a few mental drills?
Well, for me, losing focus is often about practice. If you're losing focus, you're probably not getting enough confidence in your ability to play these shots. As far as mental drills for me are concerned, it's all about practice. The more you practice and get it right, the more confident you'll be to be able to use it in matches without fear. And that way you'll keep your focus, and really you should have the confidence to play that cover drive time and time again.
Yep, technique builds confidence. It's as simple as that. If you know you can play a shot, if someone gives you a half volley and you know you can drive it, then you're going to drive it with total confidence. If you're thinking, I wonder if I'm going to hit this one along the ground or not, then you're in trouble. And what it might take is just you hit one along the ground one day and you think, oh, I can do it now. And that gives you the confidence for the rest of that innings. But then if you're not doing it consistently, then the next innings, you're going back to wondering again. And as soon as you start to wonder, you get that confusion in your head. You don't know what you're going to do. So you have to have a good technique. You have to work on your technique. And also you have to have a game plan. You have to have a tactical approach that suits your particular style. And so if you are not confident cover driving, then don't play the cover drive. You don't have to play the cover drive. You can leave it. It's outside the off stump. You can just leave it. So think about your game plan as well. But yeah, confidence comes from knowing you have the technique and the tactics to do the same thing every time, no matter what the situation.
All right, guys, Holiness also seems to be beaten by fast bowlers a lot, especially when it comes to playing the hook or the pull shot. He asks, could it be his footwork or could it be the bat? Maybe he needs a lighter one. What do you reckon?
For me, the hook shot is a shot you choose to play or not to play. If you're confident with the hook, then great. But if you're not, then maybe just consider not playing it. Duck or weave. It's a percentage shot, and even the best players often don't play the hook shot. But with the pull shot, it is all about foot position for me. You need to get into position early to play it effectively and get on top of the ball. Otherwise, you could find yourself trying to fetch it from outside off stump, and that leads to all sorts of problems. It sounds to me maybe you're not picking up the length or possibly even the line of the ball early enough. It's something, again, I see quite a lot. And for me, I like batters to have a sort of a slight back and across movement as the bowler bowls, to sort of just a slight transfer of body weight to the back foot, because I think that's a better preparation to move your feet either forwards or backwards and for getting your head position in the right place. If they're beating your bat that consistently, then I think probably you need to have a little look at your preparation, either mentally or physically, for receiving the balls, to make sure you're getting yourself in that right, correct position.
It's not really about how fast your feet move. You don't have to have super quick feet, but you do need to be able to pick up the line and the length early. And that comes with practice of facing lots of bowlers in the net and watching the ball as intently as you can. We talked about this on a previous program recently, so I won't go over all the different ways that you can improve that. But suffice to say, the key is to look at the ball as intently as possible. And then the quicker you can decide where the ball's going to pitch, the quicker you can get into position to hit it.
Thanks, guys. Our last question for today is from Vivek. And he says, I'm a cricket coach and I would like to know what to tell when a player is not performing, when a player is down with injury, or a player is not even 11, how do you deal with these people? Please let me know. So what do you reckon, Darren?
It's something I've had to do quite a lot. And I think the the honest answer is as sensitively as possible. Obviously, there'll be reasons why someone's been dropped, and there are quite a few reasons, but you know, you've come up with, it may be that there's somebody who's usually plays in the team who's come back in and someone's got to drop out. It may be that there's been a bit of run of bad form. Maybe that they think there's some areas they need to work on technically. There's all sorts of reasons why someone is being dropped, and as long as you have a reason and a decent reason, you can look at someone in the eye and give them that reason, then, you know, really, there's no better way of doing it than make sure it's face-to-face if possible, explain why you're doing it, and hopefully they'll respect you for that. You've stood up to them like that and said quite clearly why. Give them a chance to have a debate about it, because most people will kind of want to go, well, hang on a minute, I've done this, I've done that, and that's perfectly reasonable. So just face up to it. It's a horrible thing to do. It's like trying to fire someone. It's not something you ever look forward to doing, but it's something you're going to have to do at some stage as a captain or as a coach, and it doesn't get any easier either, funnily enough, particularly, you know, if you get quite close to these people as well, maybe friends or colleagues. So I'm afraid there's no simple answer to this other than, say, try and do it face-to-face, because a text message or an email these days doesn't always come across quite the way you might want it to intend to.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely face-to-face. Definitely explain your reasons for doing so. And the other thing I would add is be as clear as you can be in what the player needs to do to get back into the team. Don't try and sweeten the pill if you genuinely think that they're not going to be able to get back into the team unless someone else drops out. Be as honest as you, whatever the reason is, be as honest as you can about how they go. If it's if you're dropping someone because they're out of form to the second team, and you know there's a second team batsman who's scoring lots of runs and you're swapping them over, then say it's because Jim is, you know, scored 100 in the last 100 every time for the last 3 weeks. And you haven't got any runs in the last 3 weeks. But if you score lots of runs for the second team, then you'll be first in the queue to come back into the first team. Or whatever it is. Give them a target. Give them something to work towards, rather than just saying, you know, there's nothing I can do. You know, it's just the way it is. Be as clear as you can be. But other than that, yeah, just take a deep breath and be as nice as possible about it.
Now, David, as usual, we have our pitch vision competition, and there's a couple of really good questions to choose from, David. What do you reckon is the winner for this week? Who do you reckon will take away the pitch vision course for this week?
Well, I have to say it's Holiness for purely for the self-confidence that he shows when he says he has a lot of potential and he has great shots, but he's worried about his driving, his hooking and his pulling. So... he's got a lot of confidence, which I like. We should all have more confidence when we're batting, and he's also got the right spirit that he wants to improve. So let's give it to Holiness this week.
Yeah, well done, Holiness. And it's really easy, isn't it? All you have to do is email in your question or your comment for the week. Email that into mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And all you have to do is enter into the title podcast competition. And just email that through and you could be on your way to taking away a Pitch Vision Academy course. So if that isn't enough for you, you can get other information, tips, advice and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is also updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes, or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 7th of May. So if you want to get in touch, enter the competition, or have any other questions, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So thanks for your time, Darren and David. And thanks for listening, guys, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.